from the Danker's studio on Library Square. This is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we'll hear from Utah's lone Democrat in Washington, Jim Matheson, who announced yesterday that he won't be seeking re-election in Utah's 4th congressional district next year.
I think we'd all like to see our system of government work in a more constructive way than it is right now. But again, in terms of my decision to not run for election, again, that really wasn't a factor. In fact, my faith and my belief in our American system of government is as strong as it's ever been based on the experience I've had.
That conversation, plus a look at what the Democrats might do to try and compete with Saratoga Springs Mayor Mia Love for that seat, and your local headlines just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And welcome back to The Rundown on KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. A bit later on the show, we'll have a conversation with Representative Jim Matheson, who announced yesterday that he won't be seeking re-election next year. But we'll begin with today's top local headlines. An associate of former Utah Attorneys General Mark Shurtleff and John Swallow sought to get released from jail during his first court appearance on felony charges. Timothy Lawson is accused of interfering with criminal cases and intimidating witnesses while working as a go-between for Shurtleff and a convicted fraudster. He was charged last week as part of an investigation into allegations of wrongdoing at the Utah Attorney General's office. Prosecutors say the investigation remains open. Lawson was in court Wednesday. He sought to get his $250,000 bail lowered, but a judge told his lawyer to file a motion first. Lawson has been at the Salt Lake County Jail since his arrest on Thursday. He was charged with witness tampering, obstructing justice, tax evasion, and a pattern of unlawful activity since 2008. With the announcement on Tuesday that Jim Matheson won't be seeking re-election next year, the 2014 race for Utah's 4th congressional district has changed completely. Once the challenger to a veteran incumbent, Saratoga Springs Mayor Mia Love now faces an as-of-yet-unknown competitor. But with Matheson out, will other Utah politicians come out of the woodwork to seize a unique opportunity? For more on this story, here's KCPW's Ryan Cunningham.
Democratic Representative Jim Matheson has won 7 consecutive congressional elections in Utah. And while incumbents typically fare well in the U.S. House of Representatives, Matheson's success in a deeply Republican state is notable. For over a decade, Democrats have counted on Matheson as a dependable foothold in one of the reddest states in the country, while Republicans always kept his district in mind when trying to pick off vulnerable Democrats. Matheson maintains that a politically unfavorable situation had little to do with his decision to retire. As an incumbent, he probably had a better chance than most Democrats in the 4th District. Leah Murray, associate professor of political science at Weber State, says historical trends overwhelmingly favor congressional incumbents in general.
What we know about an incumbency advantage in congressional elections is something to the tune of 98% re-election rate. So the United States House delivers, you know, pretty much everybody who wants to run for re-election gets to go back into office. So when you take out the incumbent, it's a whole new ballgame.
So Matheson would be justified in believing he had a good chance in 2014. But without an incumbent running, do the Democrats stand a chance?
It is not a seat I think they can get without incumbency advantage. And I hate to say that, you know what I mean? Because you never know really what's going to happen. But I look at that district that he's got drawn, and that's not a Democratic district, right? So a Democrat who hasn't delivered some goods is probably going to have a hard time winning.
Utah Democrats, however, disagree with that assessment. Matt Lyon, the executive director of the Utah Democratic Party, says the demographics of Utah's 4th should make it a competitive race.
We view it as a really competitive seat. It's about a third Democratic, a third Republican, and a third Independent. So we think with the right candidate that we can certainly take it. We know that Jim Matheson and Ben McAdams clearly did really well in the district in 2012, and we think we can hold it in 2014 as well.
In addition, Lyon says he's already had 4 potential candidates approach him about running in Matheson's place. He wouldn't name names, but Lyon says those 4 candidates would bring impressive resumes to the table.
We've had 4 who are of high caliber, who are names that the news media and the public would recognize. Some of them are former candidates, some of them are currently elected, some of them are kind of leaders in the business, kind of the business and the nonprofit community.
But it remains to be seen if any Democrat could stand a chance against Republican Mia Love. Matheson narrowly defeated Love in 2012, but in the process, Love has become a highly recognizable figure in conservative politics. She was a featured speaker at the 2012 Republican National Convention and has already raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. But with Matheson out, there's a possibility that more Republican candidates will step up to the plate. In fact, Murray believes a Republican has a better chance of beating Mia Love than a Democrat does.
Mia Love doesn't have to worry so much about fundraising yet. Like, she's got to get through the delegate gauntlet of the Republican caucuses. And that's a different game. That's not a, do I have $1 million in the bank that I can spend, right? That's a, have I met 3,500 people, or, you know, the fourth of the 3,500 people that choose my district's nominee, and do they want me?
Despite the recent political quarrels, Love was complimentary of Matheson in the wake of his retirement. In a statement, Love said Matheson, quote, served our state with passion and has been a dedicated public servant during his tenure in Congress, close quote. Love went on to say that Matheson's decision would not affect her campaign. Ryan Cunningham, KCPW News.
And we'll have more on that story when we speak with Representative Matheson later on in the program. Figures from state education officials show Utah's high school graduation rates continue to rise, with 4 out of 5 high school seniors earning their diplomas in 2013. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that the graduation rate of 81% is up from 78% the year before. Last year's graduation rate is 12% higher than the 2008 rate. State Superintendent Martel Menlove says he's pleased with the steady improvement over time. Graduation rates held steady or improved for all of Utah's ethnic groups. Latinos graduated at a 68% clip compared to 63% the previous year. But graduation rates for minorities are still well behind rates for white students. The Latino graduation rate for 2013 is 17 percentage points less than their white counterparts. Each year, thousands of vehicles collide with deer and elk that are crossing Utah's highways, often causing major property damage and even death. To protect both people and wildlife, scientists are investigating the safest, most cost-effective ways to get big game across the road. Julie Kiefer of Explore Utah Science has that story.
Carol Niles was driving her SUV at 75 miles per hour along Interstate 70. She was just west of the San Rafael Swell when an elk jumped in front of her car.
I hit him square on and killed him instantly. The bag came out in my face. I was on a mountain highway with a drop-off immediately to the left lane. You know, it took me an enormous long time, I thought, to be able to stop my car.
Luckily, she wasn't seriously injured, but the collision caused $15,000 in damage to her car. Even so, she can't help but feel sorry for the elk.
I see him always. I see him in slow motion going up over my head, and he was so beautiful. And it was a really bad, bad feeling.
Utah State University scientists estimate there are 20,000 collisions with deer in Utah each year. That number doesn't include elk, which are typically larger and cause more damage. Collisions occur frequently in winter as these animals try to navigate across highways that cut through migration routes that have been in place for generations. According to Ashley Green from the Division of Wildlife Resources, this is just one of the ways in which roads are hazardous to wildlife.
They decrease the amount and quality of habitat that's available to wildlife. We obviously have increased mortality, you know, from collisions with vehicles. Roads limit access to resources and impede movement. And then, of course, roads can fragment populations and, you know, break up, you know, large populations into smaller, vulnerable subpopulations.
Utah has 44 highway crossings built specifically for wildlife, as well as thousands of other structures that wildlife could use, such as bridges, tunnels, and drainages. Until recently, no one knew how much animals actually used any of them. The Utah Division of Wildlife Resources launched the most comprehensive study of its kind in the U.S. They're collaborating with the Utah Department of Transportation and scientists at USU.
You know, as you're building an underpass, you know, that costs, you know, hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars and you know, constructing fencing, you really got to know that that stuff's working and that it's in the right place and that the type of the structure and the size of the structure that you're putting on the landscape is working and they're being effective.
To find out what works best, USU wildlife ecologist Patricia Kramer placed motion sensing cameras at 35 structures of all kinds on highways across the state. When an animal gets close, the camera snaps a series of pictures documenting whether it makes it through to the other side. Kramer and her team have looked through nearly 1.5 million pictures over the past 5 years. It may sound tedious, but Kramer considers this the best part of her job.
I like the stories that the pictures unfold, the bear, the mountain lion, and her young coming through, the deer chasing the coyote through, which I thought was a great one, the mule deer encountering the skunk at the entrance, you know, and turning around and saying, I think I'll wait on that one. So that's kind of how I do it.
Mule deer use man-made structures to cross the highway more than any other animal. They successfully crossed Utah's highways 25,000 times over 3 years. The two structures they use most were built specifically for wildlife. Both are on I-15 south of Beaver.
They went in 2004, and I have documented over 18,000 times mule deer have passed through those two structures in a few years. And the engineers did the math, and those structures paid for themselves and reduced vehicle collisions in less than 3 years.
They've reduced collisions in the area by over 90%. But deer are picky. Only 4% of all deer crossings were through existing underpasses that were not made for wildlife. By looking at characteristics of structures that deer use most, Kramer figured out they like ones that are wide, high, and short in length. Her recommendations are already being used in the design of wildlife crossings across the country.
The length of the crossing structure, which is the land they traverse underneath the highway, so it's perpendicular to all the lanes of traffic, that's the most important feature of a structure, and that the height is the least important, and then the width is the second most. And if you know about prey animals, that makes perfect sense. They want to be sure they can run through it without a mountain lion being perched somewhere in it, and then they like to have a left and right escape zone.
But what she's finding is that not all species are comfortable with the same type of crossing. In the first phase of the study, her cameras recorded only 45 successful elk crossings, compared to tens of thousands made by deer. For the first time this fall, she saw entire elk herds moving safely across the west end of I-70. They are just learning how to use a structure that was built 3 years ago. It has a high arch style opening they seem to prefer. Kramer thinks these latest findings will show how to safely move elk across highways.
When you're a scientist who sort of borders on an advocate, this is a great field because you can really do something that's so applicable and see changes that help save wildlife lives.
But her work not only impacts animals, it also impacts people. It's been 8 years since Niles hit that elk on I-70, but she still can't shake the experience.
It's scary for me to drive through that part of the country, and I sometimes just have my husband, especially if it's at dusk or something like that, when you know the animals are going to be out, I always have him drive through there for me.
Kramer's study found a need for a new deer and elk-friendly crossing along the same stretch of highway where Niles had the accident. The Utah Department of Transportation is deciding whether to put one in. For KCPW and Explore Utah Science, I'm Julie Kiefer.
And finally today, the bomb squad and a hazardous materials team were responding to a Salt Lake City neighborhood this afternoon after a homeowner found an old bottle of an explosive acid there. Salt Lake City Fire Department spokesman Jason Acey says roads were closed and some homes were evacuated after the discovery at about 11 a.m. on Wednesday on East Sunnyside Avenue. Acey says the chemical is pyrrhic acid, which historically was used as a military explosive. The substance can be desensitized by adding water, but is highly volatile when it ages and dries out. And those are our top local headlines for the day. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. Utah's lone Democratic member of Congress announced yesterday that he won't seek re-election in 2014. Chip Matheson made the announcement via a Facebook post to his followers and later confirmed that he would bow out of contending for Utah's 4th Congressional District seat next year. Matheson, the son of the late Utah Governor Scott Matheson, has represented Congress since 2001, having previously served in Utah's 2nd District. I had a chance to speak with Representative Matheson about his decision earlier today. You know, you've answered this question pretty thoroughly elsewhere, but for the record, why have you decided not to stand for re-election next year?
Well, I've always assumed I wasn't going to be a lifer in the House of Representatives. I've always assumed there are going to be different chapters in terms of my career. And ever since I got in this business, and when I first ran my campaign in 1999, this is the time. I know a lot of people are trying to dig in for deeper meanings or whatnot, but I've just decided that it's an appropriate time to move on to a new opportunity.
You know, and among other things, the statement you released yesterday says, "While my tenure in the House of Representatives will come to an end, my duty to our state and our country will undoubtedly continue." I'm wondering what that duty, what that service might look like. I mean, any designs on other offices here in the state?
Well, there's no specific design on any office. I know there's a lot of speculation in politics, and it's certainly been the case since I made this announcement myself. But I've always been interested in the public policy world. I've always been interested in doing things that can help make our country a better place. Elected office is not the only way you can be involved in the public policy world. And the honest answer is I don't know what I'm going to be doing in calendar year 2015, but I've got a year to help figure that out, and that's what's going to happen.
What about K Street and its siren call? Can you rule out working as a lobbyist in Washington?
Well, I don't. I honestly haven't even thought about what the next step's going to be, and I'm in this position where it may not be the most satisfying answer to say I really don't know what I'm going to be doing next. That's sort of the honest answer, and I've made this decision. I've got another year to serve as a congressman. I'm going to work as hard as I can to serve constituents of my congressional district, and during that time, I'm going to try to assess what the next step's going to be.
You know, there's always speculation in politics, but there has been some talk that this is a political calculation, that looking at the upcoming rematch bout against Mia Love, you saw that it was a losing battle and maybe not worth the fight. Was that part of your decision-making process?
No, that's complete nonsense, actually. I had polling that showed I was in a very strong position to win that race. I survived against the Mitt Romney wave of 2012. And I'm very confident that if I stayed on the ballot, I would have won. So that really wasn't a factor at all.
So we actually have a reporter who's covering this story. But do you think that the Democrats can hold on to this seat? What's your analysis there?
I think that voters in Utah are now more than ever inclined to look at individuals and not just vote blindly on party label. That's always been the case for me in my races over the years, or I never would have won, quite frankly. And I think there's a general disenchantment with the partisan nature of politics these days, such that voters are going to start looking at individuals. And so I think the opportunity to succeed in election, running on the ballot under any party banner, is going to be there for people if they can connect with the voters and give an idea that they're going to be a representative of their constituents and not be driven by just party or politics.
You know, and actually, there's a question in that. That disenchantment that the voters have about Washington, is that something that you yourself started to feel, given the partisan nature of politics back in Washington, D.C., and did that weigh on your decision?
I think we'd all like to see our system of government work in a more constructive way than it is right now. But again, in terms of my decision to not run for election, again, that really wasn't a factor. In fact, my faith and my belief in our American system of government is as strong as it's ever been based on the experience I've had. I think it goes through ebbs and flows in terms of how well it functions, and I have great confidence it will function better again in the future.
Well, and that's an interesting point. Everybody wants to rail against Washington, D.C., but it is what it is. Representative Matheson, I know that your time is limited, but I did have a few more questions I wanted to ask. You have you've got a year ahead of you, a year of votes where you don't have to worry about re-election. Does that change your calculus at all? I mean, does it mean that you can maybe be a little less cautious about the votes you make, or is there any relief there?
Well, I've always just voted on what I think is the right thing to do. That's been my motivation. When I first started to run, I said, I'm going to be a voice for my constituents. I'm going to put their interests above party or politics. And so there's no change for me on how I approach my voting. It's always how I've approached it. It had nothing to do with re-election issues or whatnot. And I plan on working hard this next year. I want to help try to get things done, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm as energized as I've ever been, but I'm also looking forward to what the next chapter is going to be.
You know, I suppose it's early, yet for an exit interview question, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this one anyway. Looking back on your tenure, is there any one vote that you're most proud of?
Well, that's a tough one to answer in terms of simulating it down to one vote. I'd like to say I'm real proud of a lot of different legislative accomplishments, and it's also hard to narrow it down to one, but I'm proud of working with Senator Bennett on the Washington County Lands Bill. It's the first time we've passed a public lands bill related to Utah since 1984. And we got a bunch of folks together who never thought they could agree on anything. And after 5 years of work, they all agreed on a proposal. And I'm real proud of that because I think it's an indication of how our system works best, is when we sit down and try to work it out in a constructive way. So if I were to name one legislative accomplishment, among, and there are others I could talk about as well, but that's one that I think I'm real proud of.
And that's a bill that pleased both conservationists and cities and towns in southern Utah. Finally, you know, having made this decision, what's kind of the biggest relief for you? I mean, I imagine not having to fundraise is probably one, but what other things are there from your time in office that, that you know, maybe it's a relief not to have to worry about?
Well, it's funny. I don't know that I feel relief. I enjoyed the rigors of a campaign. Campaigns are very energizing for me. I love to go out and talk to people and ask for their vote. And I always valued their vote so much. So, walking away from the effort of a campaign doesn't provide a lot of relief for me because I enjoyed that so much. This is one of the most meaningful experiences of my life that I've had, and yet I'm also very excited for what the next chapter is going to bring. And in that sense, there's a lot of excitement more than relief. That's the primary emotion I feel right now.
Well, and I think it goes without saying that we're all very curious about what that next chapter will bring, and I guess we look forward to finding that out.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Bye-bye.
That was Utah's lone Democratic member of Congress, Jim Matheson, who announced yesterday via Facebook post to his followers that he would not be running for re-election in Utah's 4th congressional district next year. You can find this interview and all of the conversations we feature on the program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And that's all the time we have for our show today. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Tyler Ford, Ryan Cunningham, and Elizabeth D. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in tomorrow for a conversation with Melissa Johnson, the outgoing mayor of West Jordan. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.